This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Unless I'm mistaken, Woods, you didn't really get to watch much of Saturday's game as you were emceeing, hosting the Anvil of Hope charity night for Ailsmith. How did that go?
It was awesome. It really was. It was an incredible, incredible night. The attention to detail at this 80s party was staggering. Like, all the centerpieces on the table were all old, like Rubik's Cubes. They had big, they had old Donkey Kong video games. They had a breakdancing team. They had a killer band. Pop Gun Rerun. They played all 80s songs. They were amazing.
Pop Gun.
They were so good. And it was really cool. So I had to dress up in costume. And it was an 80s theme. And I figured, you know, everyone's going to go hair metal. Everyone is going to go Slash and GNR and the tight jeans. And I went and I decided to go Run DMC because for a couple reasons. I love Run DMC. Ben and I were 11 years old when Raisin Hell came out. And it was like nothing I'd ever heard. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. My first intro into rap music, I think. So I always loved their look. I thought they were cool as hell. So I went to the Adidas store, and I bought a pair of Adidas that I will wear and an Adidas tracksuit that I will 1,000%. I bought a, mine was all very functional. I'll wear that Run DMC shirt. Like, everything I had on, I would wear on a Wednesday. It doesn't matter.
That's true. That's when it's a really good costume.
That's maybe the hat with the bill
well,
turned
see,
up.
That's but. My black SD hat, and all I did was just flip the bill. So I took the gold chain off of the swag chain. That gold chain.
Oh,
that
you
I had
took
on,
the SD off of it.
I took the SD off of it, and I had
very creative.
I had a blast. I don't like dressing up. When I walked out, I go. The kids were all playing in the street. They were like. Yes! And I was like, that looks amazing. So it was fun, man.
Woods DMC.
Yeah, Woods DMC. But my opening line was what slayed. So I walked up to introduce myself. I was introduced by the owner of Ailsmith. And I said, oh, man. I said, I wonder if, and I had to pull these on, my readers. And I go, I wonder if Run DMC has to wear readers now, probably. And I said, Run DMC. It's more like Walk DMC these days.
Very carefully,
got,
yeah.
Got a good laugh. So it was a lot of fun and, you know, had great food and, I mean, phenomenal food. They know how to throw a party there at Ailsmith. They were so nice, complimentary of the show. They've put in a couple of those really, really nice golf simulators, like the really, really nice ones. So got to take some swings on that. They've invited us down to swing it and drink some beers. It was a special night. It really was. And the only bummer was that I missed the game, and I had friends texting me about the game.
I don't know if it was that much of a bummer.
It's true.
On Saturday, I went to the game, and it was, I mean, there were some positives for sure in the game on Saturday.
That was but the Randy Vasquez day.
It was the Randy Vasquez. It was the Graham Pauly commits an error in the first inning, called back up from AAA, put right into the starting lineup, and of course, the ball finds him in the first inning. Spikes the throw over to Jake, who can't make the pick, would have been the final out of the inning, would have gotten Randy Vasquez through a clean first, and you're going, okay, that's, you know, you call someone up to take Yu Darvish to spot in the rotation, give him a little bit of help behind him. Of course, the next batter is Dalton Varsho, who keeps it just inside the pole for a three-run home run, and now the Padres are down early again and having to fight back against a really tough pitcher. I mean, Jose Berrios has been fantastic.
Has any other team in baseball been punished more for errors than the San Diego Padres?
Well, they have like the fourth most unearned runs, I think. I heard Jesse say that this weekend in baseball. But in terms of the number of errors that lead to unearned runs, it's like 80% or something. Like, their errors always come back to haunt them. That's not always the case in baseball.
Oh,
sometimes you make an error and the team doesn't capitalize.
Yeah.
It feels like this year, every time the Padres have made an error, the other team capitalizes on that error. And they were just never really able to recover on Saturday night. try to get something going. It just didn't really happen. They did get the, you know, they showed fight, which, you know, I understand that the manager appreciates. And as a fan, I do appreciate they got the tying go-ahead runs to the plate in the final, in the seventh and the eighth inning against the bullpen. But one of those 1-for-10 runners in scoring position nights, where you just didn't have that much of a shot. Now, Randy Vasquez, while he gave up 4 runs, only 1 was earned, and he got through 5 innings, and his stuff was really good. The metrics, the stuff plus.
Why did I see people crapping on Randy Vasquez in a spot start, you know, with 1 earned run through 5 innings? I mean, that's what you kind of dream of from your starter. Now, again, you as a pitcher, you need to pick your teammates up if they boot one. You can't leave one over the middle to guys in this league. They're going to pound you. But that being said, he's out of that inning, and it's happened, you know, so many times.
He also got hurt by a Jose Azokar getting turned around error. Yep. in the second inning when he gave up the fourth run.
Right.
And that really wasn't his fault either. So, yeah, I think if you're blaming Randy Vasquez, you're kind of missing the thread on Saturday night's game. Nice job by Johnny Brito in relief, 3 innings, 1 hit. But the highlight of the game was the ejection early on when Jurickson Profar got called out on a pitch right on the corner on the edge. You know, I couldn't tell from where I was sitting whether it was a strike or not. Jurickson obviously didn't think it was.
I mean, it nicked the zone. Yeah. Up and in. It was an up and in pitch, and it nicked the zone. But the ejection was really interesting.
So it was a fairly aggressive bat toss down, you know, spiking the bat. Now, it wasn't at the umpire. No. It was a fairly hard toss of the bat down, but he wasn't looking at the umpire. It didn't look like he was saying anything. And he said later, "I did not say a thing to the umpire." And he got a quick ejection from Ramon de Jesus. Yep. The umpire at home plate. And then Jurickson, you know, then he got really mad and started jawing with the umpire. Then Mike Schilt came in just to kind of protect Jurickson from doing anything, I think, worse. And Mike Schilt really got upset. I'm glad I was at the game because he argued through the entire inning break.
They went to commercial. Like, Don had already signed off for commercial, and then you saw the umpire give him the "you're gone," and then they just went to commercial break. And you're like, "No, I want to keep seeing this."
Yeah, yeah, you want to see him. I saw the highlights of Schilt chewing out De Jesus. Was De Jesus?
Well, he started with De Jesus, then he went over to the crew chief, I think Adrian Johnson, who was at first base, and finished his argument with him as he was heading back toward the dugout. But didn't seem like he was in any hurry to leave. There was a lot of aggressive pointing, pointing and gesticulating toward Adrian Johnson on the way out. And he got tossed as well for the first time.
Ejection for Profar.
I thought it was too, man.
If he was turned towards the umpire and slammed it while he was saying something, okay, maybe. But man, he had his back turned. He was done, and you see that all the time. Guys, yep, throwing a helmet, a bat, whatever, their elbow guards in frustration.
Look, man, you don't want it out of your little leaguers. You don't want it out of your high schoolers. You don't want it out of your college players. When you're a professional baseball player, now the argument can be made, well, you're a professional, you need to act like one. Man, heat of the moment, the grind of a season, you're working that AB, you think it might have been called a ball, you're pissed, maybe you're pissed at yourself.
That's what I think.
The helmet goes down, the bat goes down. Give him a warning. Hey, come on, cannot throw your equipment, bro, right? Give him a warning, be on with it. You can't run a team's 3-hole hitter in the first inning of a big
game.
Was he 5 that day?
I think so.
You can't run that guy in the first inning.
You're starting left fielder.
Yeah, you're starting left fielder. It's weak. Nobody came there to watch Ramon de Jesus umpire. They didn't, you know, so I thought it was pretty weak. You know, there's a couple of lines that you really can't cross. It didn't seem like he crossed either of those lines. But hey, listen, we're homers. That's how
we're watching Schilt in the YouTube stream. He had the umpire on the back pedal a little bit.
Yeah.
Usually umpires stand their ground against managers, and Adrian Johnson was kind of backing up. Well, looking at Mike Schilt, this guy is pretty angry. I got one question for you. First, we need a contestant for Take on Woods. We're only like a minute away here, so call now, 833-288-0973. Play our musical trivia game in just a second, but you need to call in. 833-288-0 to qualify for our grand prize getaway to Las Vegas. Do you feel like if it was Tatis or Manny or Xander, the umpire would have thrown him out? Do you feel like Jurickson doesn't, even though he's a veteran and he's been around the league for a while, that he doesn't,
he's irrelevant?
He doesn't get quite the same respect. I don't know if would you if I was an umpire, I wouldn't have thrown out Jurickson in that case either. But I've got to think that they look at those stars and they go, I can't run a star in the first inning. And they think that Jurickson, not really a star.
They've done it many times. Yeah. I mean, it's happened many times. It's just the umpiring never should be the story of the game. And you know, listen, you got to let that guy, with his back to you, not in your face, spitting at you, you know, pointing fingers, you got to let that guy, give him a warning. No problem. No problem whatsoever saying, Jurickson, no. Come on, man. Cannot throw that. Cannot throw your gear, bud. You know, that's consider this a warning, and I think everything's
fine. They have
fine
a process for that. You get fined for throwing equipment fines for throwing your gear.
Yeah.
And he probably should have and probably did get the equipment fine for throwing his gear.
Yeah.
But to take him out of the ball game, I mean, you know, where the Padres have won, I don't know, maybe. You never know.
The Schilt defending his player, though, yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we've been waiting for here a lot.
It was an opportunity for him to show that off at some point, which I think he was kind of glad that he had that chance.
Big time.
And he also got to watch Don and Mudd call the game, which he had said.
Yeah.
Never really. I was surprised.
Joked on the broadcast. you guys both didn't see it. Top of the third inning, they come back from break, and Don goes, well, guess we could just go ahead and tell you, we were supposed to have a guest at the bottom of the second inning, but he's no longer in this game.
Yeah, he's been ejected. Yeah, that's exactly right. So he's watching from the clubhouse. His first foray into the Don and Mudd experience, and said how talented they were and are. And he's right.
All right, looks like we've got some contestants on the line. Let's get to today's game of Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods.
Woods. Woods.
All right, we got Chad as our contestant. Chad, I've got some technical difficulties here because my third category, oh, here it is. Let me see if I can send. I don't know why it didn't get sent to Polly, but I'm going to send it to you right now. And hopefully you'll get it as I explain the game. Chad, good morning. How are you?
Old machine over here.
I know.
I got it.
Chad, are you there? Are you really
I'm
Chad?
Here.
There
you are. Me?
Oh, yeah. Well, you are on the air. You are ready to play Take on Woods. Woods has left the studio. Take on Woods is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Only takes 15 minutes. You don't have to get out of your car. For directions and discounts, go to SoCalOilChange.com. That's SoCalOilChange.com. Here's how it works. We'll give you three categories. You'll get five questions. If you can beat or tie Woods, we'll put you into the grand prize drawing for a two-night stay at the Westgate Las Vegas Resort and Casino and two tickets to Cool and the Gang, the Westgate, with $70 million in room renovations. Check him out now, and you can get your tickets to Cool and the Gang at Ticketmaster.com. So, Chad, here are your category choices. Royal titles. Those are five song titles or artists that include a British royal title in their name. No Lefts, All Right. Those are five song titles that include the word or phrase All Right. And our new category, Fruit Salad, five bands or artists with a fruit in their name. So royal titles, No Lefts, All Right, and Fruit Salad. What would you like to play, Chad?
Let's go with Fruit Salad, please.
Fruit Salad, the one I just sent to Polly 4 seconds ago. All right, you'll have 60 seconds to name as many as you can here. We're looking for five bands or artists with a fruit in their name. Our first questions are two-second songs, so Polly's going to play the music. Need to give me the title and the artist. Actually, it's bands, it's song titles and artists with fruits in their name. So, title of the song and the artist with a fruit in their name. Chad, are you ready to play?
Song title or
artist, right. Yeah, they're not all artists. There's also song titles with fruits.
All right, sounds great.
Let's Sorry about my, I was flustered by my lack of a third category this morning. I distinctly remember sending it to Paulie, so I was very confused.
Oh, you didn't.
All right, 60 seconds on the clock. The category fruit salad. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Chad. Let's take on Woods.
All right.
You can pass if you don't know it.
I can't hear you.
Oh,
can't hear it.
Play it again. Play it a little more, Paulie. A little louder.
One. Oh, got it. Got Raspberry Beret by Prince.
Correct. Which LA rock band is best known for their 1992 hit, No Rain?
Blind Melon.
Correct. Dolores O'Riordan joined which Irish rock band as lead singer in 1990?
Cranberries.
Correct. One of the most successful girl groups of the 1980s were which British ladies behind Cruel Summer and other hits?
Bananarama.
Correct. Which singer-songwriter won a female rock vocal performance Grammy for her 1997 recording of Criminal?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Which singer-songwriter won a best female rock vocal performance Grammy for her 1997 recording of Criminal? Oh, no. The time is up. Do you know the answer, Chad?
I'm searching. I can't.
No, that's
I
all right.
Can't
you got four. You got
if
four.
If he would have had it right at the buzzer.
Yeah, just because of the little audio difficulty at the beginning, I wanted to give him an extra second there. That was Fiona Apple, hey, but you got the other
Chad,
ones.
Chad, four out of five?
Very well done. Very well done. Let's bring Woods in. Raspberry Beret, Blind Melon, The Cranberries, Bananarama. He doesn't get the category. Chad's score is locked in. All right. 60 seconds back on the clock. Your time begins when Paul plays the music. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Chad.
It's Prince. It's Raspberry Beret.
Correct. Which L.A. rock band is best known for their 1992 hit No Rain?
Blind Melon.
Correct. Dolores O'Riordan joined which Irish
Cranberries.
Rock? Correct. One of the most successful girl groups of the 1980s were which British ladies behind Cruel Summer and other hits?
Bananarama.
Correct. Which singer-songwriter won a Best Female Rock Vocal Performance Grammy for her 1997 recording of Criminal?
Fiona Apple.
Oh, 5-4. Chad. Fruit salad goes
Fruit
to Woods
salad.
Today.
Like
and
it.
Chad, well played, but you went up against Woods, and sometimes when he is locked in, he is unbeatable.
Yeah, just throwing my fastball.
That last
today.
One, Fiona Apple, was the difference in the game
I
there
love
today.
Her.
Oof. All right, well, we're going to take a little time out. We'll come back with Don't Do This when we return.
John Sterling got an interesting. In my opinion.
I think he got hosed.
I think he got hosed by the New York Yankees. I really do.
I mean, it depends on what he thinks about it.
That's
if he's
true.
Happy, it's a do this.
That's true.
For you, though, it would have been a don't do this.
We're talking about the New York
it's
Yankees.
The new, this is not the Oakland Athletics, Benjamin. This is the New York Yankees. What in the world did I see?
Well, that's coming up next with Ben and Woods after traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You're a dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, Don't Do This is brought to you by the Kraft Taco in Sereno Valley. The Kraft Taco, some of the best quality tacos in all of San Diego. Go to thecrafttaco.com. Take a look at their happy hour specials today. Thecrafttaco.com. We had a lot of discussion during our break there about don't do this. We're just going to kind of organically go through this.
Holistically. We're going to do it holistically.
We may have three don't do thises. We may have two do do this. I have no idea where we're going. So let's just get started. With the story that you teased before we left. The New York Yankees honoring John Sterling, their longtime radio play-by-play voice who announced his retirement just a few days ago, kind of abruptly, unexpectedly to fans at least, a couple of weeks into the season after, 36 years as the voice of the Yankees, stepping away. Now he's in his 80s, and they had a big, nice, ceremony to honor him.
Sure.
Yesterday at Yankee Stadium.
This is unbelievable.
They presented him with a nice gift for his years of service.
It's a gift.
It is a gift.
I mean, better than a shake of the hand and a pat on the back and a thank you.
You're the New York Yankees, and your legendary broadcaster of 36 years has just retired. And what do? You go back into the New York Yankees prize closet, and you have your manager and your second baseman drag in the box, mind you, still out, out to the NY logo behind home plate, an 83-inch television still in the box for John Sterling.
It's an LG OLED Evo, though.
It is a nice television. John, here's a tweet I just saw. John Sterling told us he has five TVs in his apartment. Well, now he's got six. after the Yankees just dragged an 83-inch TV out to him. I swear to God they forgot to get him something.
So,
I swear.
When you watch that video that we just played on our YouTube stream, we had it muted. It's got the PA announcer, and he says something along the lines of, a brand new LG TV. LG, the proud television sponsor of the New York Yankees.
Yeah, you got it free.
So they got it for free.
So it's not...
Like, they didn't even have some intern, hey, on your way to the ballpark, and you just stop by Target or Best Buy.
That TV cost $499 at Costco. No, it's actually a several thousand dollar television.
I looked it up. I got it right here on Best Buy. Yeah. It's a $4,700 TV.
Okay, that's
Does that change
that's a
anything?
Nice television.
Cost them nothing.
Yeah, but it would have cost John Sterling $4,700 if he wanted to buy it.
He already has five.
But probably not one that big.
How about a Rolex? Thanks for your many years of service. Here's a Rolex.
Does an 80-something-year-old need to be going out pimping a Rolex on his wrist?
I think they need a lot more.
Does he need a 6 TV?
I think he get a lot more. If he doesn't have one that big, then yes. Now, I will say, someone needs to install that for him, because if it's just if they just left him with the box and like put it in the back of his car on the
him
way out,
trying to hang it,
trying to get it up to his apartment and hang it himself, that would be a don't do this for me. You have to include installation. If you're going to give an 83-year-old or 85-year-old a television, you have to include installation.
Our
with that.
Our boss, Adam, is in the chat. He says, it would have cost him $4,700 if he decided he needed a sixth TV.
A sixth TV, correct.
In his apartment.
If I'm him, I'd just leave it in the clubhouse. Thanks for nothing.
This is literally my donation to the Yankees.
Thanks for literally.
What would have been a better gift? You wanted a Rolex, but maybe...
I mean, it's something cool.
So $4,700, let's say $5,000 is the budget. What would you want?
For $5,000? Can't get a Rolex for $5,000.
I think something more personal, like a framed
36
photograph,
years, though,
some sort of
your budget
plaque.
Your budget should be more than $5,000 for 36 years. How about $1,000 for every year I've been here? $36,000 budget. Send me on a vacation. Anything.
Again, it comes back this is the New York Yankees.
And the thing is, it's in a box that your manager and your second baseman, like, they look like they're moving into a condo. It's so haphazard, man. That is terrible. That is terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Them shuffling that thing out of the dugout made me laugh all weekend long.
Kleber's like, what? We have a game. Get your ass over here, pitch into the back of this. It's unreal, man. It's unreal. I've never seen anything like it. I'd rather have a surfboard. After 36 years. Give me the San Diego surfboard.
86-year-old man definitely does not need a surfboard, but
that
has to be
a bit. This has to be a bit. Well, it's got
to
be a bit.
I need to know.
Adam seems to agree, so hey, keep in mind, Adam, when we've been here for 36 years and we retire, we're expecting something better than a large television.
Holy crap. It was one of the best stories of the weekend. It's just incredible, man. Just incredible. What was the other one we had? No. Oh, we got audio of, man, this is crazy because we're heading into Colorado today. We got a game against the Rockies today. Well, they should have had a walk-off home run yesterday. Jacob Stallings was called.
So they played a doubleheader.
They
so
played
is this
a doubleheader.
The first game?
I believe this is the...
They won the first game 3-2, but they got bodied in the second game, so I can't imagine they had a chance at a walk-off
home
run.
So then this is the
first game. They ended up winning 2-1 in 10 innings, but this was in the ninth?
This was in the ninth. Okay. Bottom of the ninth, two outs, Jacob Stallings at the dish.
Pitching a double play, and this ball's tagged deep left field. The second, I think he thought it was out.
I think Dylan Moore had it in his glove. I think he was going to rob him, and then when he hit the wall and it kind of came back and it popped out of the glove.
You can't just get
you. He jumped on this, but watch Dylan Moore, who, by the way, there's fan interference.
Good.
Hey, Rockies fan.
But where's his arm, though?
That's a homer. That's going to be a walk-off homer.
No, it's not.
It's got to be.
No, it's not. The umpires came back on and banged it. And so he's out.
So fan interference. If the ball is beyond the wall, the fan can do whatever they want.
Yep.
Now, you can, I think, like hack off a guy's arm with an axe once it goes over the wall. But if you are on the playing side of the field and you touch the ball, umpires can rule that an out as fan interference.
Yeah, that should have been a walk-off in the first game. Now, again, they ended up winning that game, but holy cow, man.
I heard on the broadcast yesterday, Jesse Agler talked about that game, and like you said, 2-1 in extra innings, but it was 0-0 through nine going into extras after that home run that was called back.
Yeah.
They said it was, Jesse said it was only the third time in history at Coors Field that a game has gone scoreless through nine innings.
You haven't seen the San Diego Padres yet.
No, both teams. 0-0.
I know.
The reason they needed to play a doubleheader is they got snowed out, I believe, on Friday.
Oh, wow.
Now, the Padres are headed there, but I think it's actually supposed to be nice, 70 degrees today.
Oh, nice.
The weather in Denver can wildly fluctuate this time of year.
Sunshine State.
So hopefully the Padres get four good days coming up. All right, let's just let's end it there. That is don't do this for a Monday.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
Because I want to tease a story that can kind of go either way. I saw some agreement and some disagreement with a tweet that a former Padre, Cameron Maben, actually a couple of tweets that he sent out over the weekend in relation to the Xander Bogart struggles and the idea of giving him a standing ovation. We talked about it a little bit last week. He had some very unique thoughts on how you should fan in Major League Baseball. And not what I expected to hear from a former big leaguer as well. That's coming up next, and we'll also go through Friday night's game as well on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
I didn't pick them. I had a couple of... These were not the worst two Padres games to miss for me. On Friday night, Benny, I had to work the Seals game, which we won, which was awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We beat the coach.
Who called you a cheater last year.
Yeah, I wrote it on the whiteboard. Beat the crap out of them. And he was pissing and moaning the entire game. Just, I've never seen a grown man soil his pants more than Kurt Mahlowski. And we knocked his Vancouver Warriors out of the playoffs. So, sucks to suck. Better luck next year. He has so many good, they have so many good players on that team. I almost tweeted, man, with this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy on your team, you don't make the playoffs? Sounds like a coaching issue to me.
Trying to get him fired.
He lost his mind. Didn't say a word to me. Didn't look at me. So every time something would happen in the booth, I would stand with my hands up like this every time, all game, my hands up. Somebody took a picture of me. So every time
they
had a review, I would stand like this, hands up in the air. And, it was great. So I missed that, but I was, looking at my phone from time to time, and within about 10 minutes of the game starting, I was getting texts going, oh no, here we go. Oh no. So it felt like it was over before it started.
Well, yeah. Remember, we just talked about Saturday's game when they fell behind early and could not come back. Friday's game was pretty much the same story. 5-1 loss to the Blue Jays, Matt Waldron. Kind of the one bad inning phenomenon, and he didn't get help from his defense either. I don't think there were any actual charged errors, but Jackson Merrill had kind of a misplay in center field that helped some offense. Justin Turner hit a solo home run in the first inning, but it was the 4-run second, put the Padres down 5-0 early, and Yariel Rodriguez, who was making his second start for the Blue Jays, went 4 innings, gave up just a solo home run to Fernando Tatis Jr., struck out 7, looked like a promising acquisition for the Blue Jays, and both bullpens were really good. 9 1/3 shutout innings combined, but that's not good when you fall behind early, as the Padres were just never able to recover in that 5-1 loss. And, that stretch of Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, when they scored 0 against the Brewers, 1 against the Blue Jays, and 2 against the Blue Jays, 3 runs in 3 games, was unfortunately and painfully reminiscent of some of the stretches from last season where they would go into offensive funks. And, it's weird because you look at the Padres and you go, what's the biggest issue with the team right now?
For me, it's defense. that it seems to be
more than the lineup and the offensive production overall.
As a fan of this team that sits there at 500 right now, there are days, Ben, when I go, man, I feel like we're better than a 500 ball club. Then I really think about it and I go, I feel like we're lucky to be 500 based on the teams that we've played, right? We haven't gotten to play our games against, Colorado. That's going to happen now. I mean, we have faced some really good teams in these first couple of weeks of the season. And So I think generally I feel, hey, man, 500 is pretty solid for what I was expecting. You cut $90 million from the payroll. You got new guys in the bullpen. You got new guys in the rotation. I'm not super pissed at a 13-13 ball club. And then I start thinking about some of the ones that got away. I think about some of the ones that, you know, the offense went lifeless and listless again. And I think, okay, but, you know, you can't get super pissed off if Jose Berrios shoves it on you. He's really, really good. You know, you can't be super upset if your number five starter does what a number five starter will do from time to time. He's given you some good outings. He gave you a bad one on Friday. You know, the offense has got a hit. But for me, defensively, that's the thing I'm most surprised
Well, I think
about.
What worries me is that the Padres should be better than a 500 team. Just like we said all last year, they should be better than this. And
based on your feeling?
No, based on the numbers. Okay, like, well, offensively, they are 6th in OPS. They're 7th in on-base percentage. They're 9th in average. They're 4th in walks. They're 5th in home runs. They're 5th in triples. They're 11th in doubles. They're 3rd in hits, and they're how many in runs? They are 7th in runs. So that is a top 5-6 offense in baseball. Pitching-wise, they're top 10 in most categories, top 15. This is the opposite. This is disastrously bad, Paul. If the Padres can't get any really better than they're playing right now.
That's the tough part.
And the fact that they're not winning should be incredibly alarming, actually. The fact that they're not capitalizing, they're not 17-9 right now, and they're 13-13 means once again, this team isn't getting the most out of the production that they got just like last year. We're going right down the same road again. They should be better than 13-13. I agree that it feels like they've shown some more fight and they've got a better chemistry and a lot of good things that hopefully won't continue them down this road. But there's really not a lot of areas where they can dramatically improve from their first 26 games. We've seen the Padres close to their best, and it's a 500 team now. What do you do? Like, you can't really improve the offense much. It's already been really, really good, and yet they still have these stretches where they don't score runs and they lose games because 10 of their games they've scored two or fewer runs. It's a feast or famine offense again.
Yeah. Yeah, the
and that's very hard to fix, well, as we found out last year. How do you fix a feast or famine offense?
It's the hardest
you
thing
can't
to
just
put
say,
finger
hey,
on.
Hey, keep producing, but just do it more spread out a little bit more and stop doing it all on the same day.
You can't just
tell people, okay, well, you have a good day today and then you have your good day tomorrow. It's the same as last year. Everyone either hits or everyone doesn't hit.
How many seasons, how many months in a row are we going to say this team should be better? We did it all of last year.
I mean, I don't know what really my expectations were. If you take away, and you got to remember, too, they've had some pretty dramatic comeback wins that they didn't have last year. And I give them immense credit for that. And thank God, because we needed that last year. Had we had a few of those last year, we're a playoff team. So as long as we continue on the path, Ben, 500 is not bad. I mean, it's not bad for what I expected. And again, against the caliber of teams that they've played. Now, this to me, and I said it last week, this will be the most interesting 4-game set of the season so far. It's the one that gets me the most on edge because these are the teams you have to beat. Colorado has no pressure on them. Zero. None whatsoever. They have no pressure to win these games. They're going to go out. They're going to be loose. They're going to have fun. They're going to play baseball. The Padres, you have to beat the crap out of this team. This is...
Have they been loose and having fun in their 5-17 starts so far?
Where's the pressure?
There's no pressure, but I mean, it can't be that fun to be 17.
You know what I'm saying? Loose. They're not squeezing the sawdust out.
-55 run differential. I mean, they've been getting absolutely obliterated. Other than the White Sox, who are 3-18, the Rockies have been the worst team in all of baseball.
Which means the pressure is squarely on the back of the San Diego Padres. Period. The end. I mean, they're not expected to win. You are, and you need to. A split is just as unacceptable as anything I've ever seen. And in a 4-game set, team can scratch out a win. A sweep would be fantastic, but a split is unacceptable.
No, you need at least three out of four.
You got to have three out of four. You just have to.
Plus, you're taking on a team that's had to play a doubleheader yesterday, so their pitching rotation is kind of in shambles going into this series. They don't even have a starter name for Wednesday, so they probably have to call someone up. You have an opportunity here that you have to take advantage of, but I agree with you. That scares me a little bit when you go into a place that has always been a tough stadium for the Padres to play at. Rockies always play better at home than they do on the road. They're 3-6 at home, which is much better than the 2-11.
Yeah.
They are away from home this year. But yeah, split feels like a real loss.
It does. It really does.
For the Padres.
And the players aren't going to say that. And Schilt's not going to say that. But they know it. They know that's a team they have to beat. You know, you look across the diamond and you look at the roster and you go, we need to beat these guys. And they absolutely should. So it's so terrifying playing that team in that ballpark. It seems like Charlie Blackmon and Ryan McMahon, those guys always show out against the Padres. And, you know, they don't have pitching. They don't have defense. We need to go in and finally, you know, Mike Schilt's been talking a lot about identity. Let this be your identity. Xander, Manny, Tatis, they need to go off in this series. They need to carry this team, period. And guys need to get hot. Good place to do it. Really, really good place to get some knocks, get your averages up, get that mojo back, whatever trope you want to use. This is the time to do it. So you got to go into Colorado and announce your presence with authority. You know what I mean? You do.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Cameron Maben
yeah.
and what he had to say, former Padres center fielder.
I got home from the Seals game and was laying in bed trying to come down from that victory, and I saw Ham, like right when I got home at 10 o'clock, call it, and I was so cooked. I was like, I don't even have the energy to argue about Cameron Maben. We'll save it for Monday. So give me give me the tweets and then
we'll
talk
about
it.
I think it started, it was a Juan Soto discussion. Yeah, he's commenting, so many people hating when I said sign him now, but I live this. This is the type of accountability and atmosphere a player of his caliber needs, meaning playing in New York. Playing there, you know, there's no time for BS effort that you saw at times in SD. There's an expectation as a player you respect because of how invested every single person in the city and stadium is. You can feel that energy, and you can tell Soto loves it and is thriving. And he got some pushback from some Padres fans and others. And he says, in San Diego, if you struggle, you know, as a player, nobody's booing you, nobody's booing you, telling you you're trash, you should die, etc. There's a different level of expectation despite attendance, and I live this. It's not a biased opinion. When you play in New York City, you wake up, think, I better be locked in, or this fan base, these people will let me know daily they booed Derek Jeter when he went 0 for 32. Come on.
What are your thoughts?
As a native San Diegan and baseball fan, I don't like being accused of being the reason why my team essentially has never won a World Series, because
correct.
I have not cared enough as a fan to be hard enough on the players to really bring them and drive them to their best.
You know, I saw a really good tweet that said the Red Sox didn't win a World Series championship for 86 years. 86 years they went without a title because their fan base was too nice. That's not the case, right? 86, the 86 years drought that they had, I'll clue you guys in on something. Had nothing to do with the fan base. It had to do with the caliber of the players. And it had to do with getting hot at the right time in October. That's all it is. Telling someone that they need to die, Cameron, we rail against that. I can't stand when I see a Padres fan attack a player on Instagram or send DMs. I think that is the trashiest, lowest of the low you can go. I'm never going to advocate for that. Never. Never will I advocate. Go into some of these DMs and tell them you should die.
Well, it's funny that it's a player who's advocating for it.
Right. It is very odd.
Someone who actually had to live it said, no, I need more death threats to play better.
It was
essentially what Cameron Maben is saying.
It's a real tired.
Now, he's entitled to his opinion.
Sure.
He says, I played for both teams. And if both are sold out, there's not atmosphere like playing in New York City and pinstripes.
He hasn't been here in a while.
If you're trying to even compare the two atmospheres, you're delusional.
He hasn't been here in a while then. I mean, Petco Park, I remarked yesterday on a Sunday afternoon, jamming. I mean, absolutely filled to the brim with people. And so I had no energy to argue with Cameron Maben then. I don't have any energy to argue with him now. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Support players, boo players, whatever you want to do. But there's no need for, you know, death threats and things of that nature. It doesn't make a player play better. Juan Soto's not playing well in New York because they're screaming they want him to die. I know that. That's a fact. He's not going to the ballpark. I better get a hit or they're going to kill me. Now, that would be an interesting way to play baseball. If you don't get knocks, they shoot you. That would be a very interesting way. Like, how did that work out for Joey Gallo in New York? It almost killed him. It almost broke him as a man. You know, so I don't say it's got to be kumbaya all the time. And they'll be fine.
Now, the Yankees do have the most World Series titles.
Yeah.
Although, I'd argue strongly that for many, many, many decades, they also had all the best players.
That's exactly right.
And that's probably why they won the bulk. Now, they haven't won one since 2009.
Right.
And the teams that have won it since are an eclectic mix. And I wouldn't say that the Giants, Cardinals, Red Sox, Royals, Cubs, Astros, Nationals, Dodgers, Dodgers doesn't count. There was no fans in that one.
Right.
Braves and Rangers. Those are the different teams that have won it since then. I don't know that any of those fan bases are particularly brutally hard on their teams yet. They won World Series titles.
Talk about bias. I'm from there. No one gives a frog's fat ass about the Texas Rangers until they make the playoffs, Ben. They really don't. And Kansas City, are those fans notoriously mean and vicious? Washington, the Nationals, those fans vicious and mean? It's a dumb take by Cameron Maybin, who had his moment on Twitter, and he got dragged for it. I think rightfully so.
If you've got some thoughts, you can join us, 833-288-0973. Take some phone calls after you check a traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Now, I do think that psychologically, individually, there are some people who respond better to positive reinforcement, and there are some people who are just a little more motivated when they're worried about the negative criticism they may get if they fail. And that is an individual, that's an individual personality trait. You may be sharpest and at your best knowing that, you know, tightrope walker. If I make a bad step, I fall off the cliff to my death. But other people may respond better knowing, hey, if I get the game-winning hit here, the crowd is going to go crazy and they're going to shower me with love. That's a personal, psychological, just kind of how you're motivated and how you're wired.
Again, there's zero correlation to mean fans and championships.
Correct.
That's what it boils down
to. Correct.
Because if that were the case, Philadelphia, the Flyers, the Eagles, the Phillies, the Sixers would win every year. The Knicks, the Yankees, the Mets, the Giants, the Jets would win every year. They don't. Rarely. Rarely, if ever, for a lot of those teams. So it's a dumb take. And it's tired. It's very, very tired. And I'm too tired to argue with Cameron Maybin.
You got some thoughts? 833-288-0973. We'll come back. Woody says he's got a surprise.
Oh, we got a surprise for you. You'll like this.
I don't know that I will, but we'll find out next year on 97.3 The Fan.
I didn't pick them. I had a couple of... These were not the worst two Padres games to miss for me. On Friday night, Benny, I had to work the Seals game, which we won, which was awesome.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We beat the coach.
Who called you a cheater last year.
Yeah, wrote it on the whiteboard. Beat the crap out of them. And he was pissing and moaning the entire game. Just, I've never seen a grown man soil his pants more than Kurt Mahlowski. And we knocked his Vancouver Warriors out of the playoffs. So... sucks to suck. Better luck next year. He has so many good, they have so many good players on that team. I almost tweeted, man, with this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy on your team, you don't make the playoffs. Sounds like a coaching issue to me.
Trying to get him fired.
He lost his mind. Didn't say a word to me. Didn't look at me. So every time something would happen in the booth, I would stand with my hands up. Like this, every time, all game, my hands up. Somebody took a picture of me. So every time
they
had a review, I would stand like this, hands up in the air. And it was great. So I missed that, but I was, you know, looking at my phone from time to time. And within about 10 minutes of the game starting, I was getting texts going, oh no, here we go. Oh no. So it felt like it was over before it started.
Well, yeah. Remember, we just talked about Saturday's game when they fell behind early and could not come back. Friday's game was pretty much the same story. 5-1 loss to the Blue Jays. Matt Waldron, kind of the one bad inning phenomenon. And he didn't get help from his defense either. I don't think there were any actual charged errors. But Jackson Merrill had kind of a misplay in center field that helped some offense. Justin Turner hit a solo home run in the first inning. But it was the four-run second, put the Padres down 5-0 early. And Yariel Rodriguez, who was making his second start for the Blue Jays, went four innings, gave up just a solo home run to Fernando Tatis Jr., struck out seven, looked like a promising acquisition for the Blue Jays, and both bullpens were really good. Nine and a third shutout innings combined, but that's not good when you fall behind early, as the Padres were just never able to recover in that 5-1 loss. And, you know, that stretch of Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, when they scored zero against the Brewers, one against the Blue Jays, and two against the Blue Jays, three runs in three games, was unfortunately and painfully reminiscent of some of the stretches from last season where they would go into offensive funks. And, you know, it's weird because you look at the Padres and you go, what's the biggest issue with the team right now?
For me, it's defense. that it seems to be
more than the lineup and the offensive production overall.
You know, as a fan of this team that sits there at 500 right now, there are days, Ben, when I go, man, I feel like we're better than a 500 ball club. Then I really think about it and I go, I feel like we're lucky to be 500 based on the teams that we've played, right? We haven't gotten to play our games against, you know, Colorado. That's going to happen now. I mean, we have faced some really good teams in these first couple of weeks of the season. And so I think generally I feel, hey, man, 500 is pretty solid for what I was expecting. You cut $90 million from the payroll. You got new guys in the bullpen. You got new guys in the rotation. I'm not super pissed at a 13-13 ball club. And then I start thinking about some of the ones that got away. I think about some of the ones that, you know, the offense went lifeless and listless again. And I think, okay, but, you know, you can't get super pissed off if Jose Berrios shoves it on you. He's really, really good. You know, you can't be super upset if your number five starter does what a number five starter will do from time to time. He's given you some good outings. He gave you a bad one on Friday. You know, the offense has got a hit. But for me, defensively, that's the thing I'm most surprised.
Well, I think
about
what worries me is that the Padres should be better than a 500 team. Just like we said all last year, they should be better than this. And while,
I mean, based on your feeling?
No, based on the numbers. Okay, like, well, offensively, they are sixth in OPS. They're seventh in on-base percentage. They're ninth in average. They're fourth in walks. They're fifth in home runs. They're fifth in triples. They're 11th in doubles. They're third in hits, and they're how many in runs? They are seventh in runs. So that is a top 5-6 offense in baseball. Pitching-wise, they're top 10 in most categories, top 15. This is the opposite. This is disastrously bad, Paul. If the Padres can't get any really better than they're playing right now.
That's the tough part.
And the fact that they're not winning should be incredibly alarming, actually. The fact that they're not capitalizing, they're not 17-9 right now, and they're 13-13, means once again, this team isn't getting the most out of the production that they got, just like last year. We're going right down the same road again. They should be better than 13-13. I agree that it feels like they've shown some more fight and they've got a better chemistry and a lot of good things that hopefully won't continue them down this road. But there's really not a lot of areas where they can dramatically improve from their first 26 games. We've seen the Padres close to their best, and it's a 500 team now. What do you do? Like, you can't really improve the offense much. It's already been really, really good, and yet they still have these stretches where they don't score runs and they lose games because 10 of their games they've scored two or fewer runs. It's a feast or famine offense again.
Yeah, the
and that's very hard to fix, well, as we found out last year. How do you fix a feast or famine offense?
It's the hardest
you
thing
can't
to
just
put
say,
finger
hey,
on.
Hey, keep producing, but just do it more spread out a little bit more and stop doing it all on the same day.
You can't just tell people,
okay, well, you have a good day today and then you have your good day tomorrow. It's the same as last year. Everyone either hits or everyone doesn't hit.
How many seasons, how many months in a row are we going to say this team should be better? We did it all last year.
I mean, I don't know what really my expectations were. If you take away, and you got to remember, too, they've had some pretty dramatic comeback wins that they didn't have last year. And I give them immense credit for that. And thank God, because we needed that last year. Had we had a few of those last year, we're a playoff team. So as long as we continue on the path, Ben, 500 is not bad. I mean, it's not bad for what I expected. And again, against the caliber of teams that they've played. Now, this to me, and I said it last week, this will be the most interesting four-game set of the season so far. It's the one that gets me the most on edge because these are the teams you have to beat. Colorado has no pressure on them. Zero. None whatsoever. They have no pressure to win these games. They're going to go out. They're going to be loose. They're going to have fun. They're going to play baseball. The Padres, you have to beat the crap out of this team. This is...
Have they been loose and having fun in their 5-17 starts so far?
Where's the pressure?
There's no pressure, but I mean, it can't be that fun to be 5-17.
You know what I'm saying? Loose. They're not squeezing the sawdust out.
-55 run differential. I mean, they've been getting absolutely obliterated. Other than the White Sox, who are 3-18, the Rockies have been the worst team in all of baseball.
Which means the pressure is squarely on the back of the San Diego Padres. Period. The end. I mean, they're not expected to win. You are, and you need to. A split is just as unacceptable as anything I've ever seen. And in a four-game set, team can scratch out a win. A sweep would be fantastic, but a split is unacceptable.
No, you need at least three out of four.
You've got to have 3 out of 4. You just have to.
Plus, you're taking on a team that had to play a doubleheader yesterday, so their pitching rotation is kind of in shambles going into this series. They don't even have a starter name for Wednesday, so they probably have to call someone up. You have an opportunity here that you have to take advantage of, but I agree with you. That scares me a little bit. When you go into a place that has always been a tough stadium for the Padres to play at, Rockies always play better at home than they do on the road. They're 3-6 at home, which is much better than the 2-11.
Yeah.
They are away from home this year. But yeah, split feels like a real loss.
It does. It really does.
For the Padres.
And the players aren't going to say that. And Schilt's not going to say that. But they know it. They know that's a team they have to beat. You know, you look across the diamond and you look at the roster and you go, we need to beat these guys. And they absolutely should. So it's so terrifying playing that team in that ballpark. It seems like Charlie Blackmon and Ryan McMahon, those guys always show out against the Padres. And, you know, they don't have pitching. They don't have defense. We need to go in and finally, you know, Mike Schilt's been talking a lot about identity. Let this be your identity. Xander, Manny, Tatis, they need to go off in this series. They need to carry this team. Period. And guys need to get hot. Good place to do it. Really, really good place to get some knocks, get your averages up, get that mojo back, whatever trope you want to use. This is the time to do it. So you got to go into Colorado and announce your presence with authority. You know what I mean? You do.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about Cameron Maben and what he had to say. Former Padres center fielder.
I got home from the Seals game and was laying in bed trying to come down from that victory. And I saw Ham, like right when I got home at 10 o'clock, call it. And I was so cooked. I was like, I don't even have the energy to argue about Cameron Maben. We'll save it for Monday. So give me the tweets and then we'll talk about it.
So I think it started, it was a Juan Soto discussion. Yeah, he's commenting, so many people hating when I said sign him now, but I live this. This is the type of accountability and atmosphere a player of his caliber needs, meaning playing in New York. Playing there, you know, there's no time for BS effort that you saw at times in SD. There's an expectation as a player you respect because of how invested every single person in the city and stadium is. You can feel that energy, and you can tell Soto loves it and is thriving. And he got some pushback from some Padres fans and others, and he says, in San Diego, if you struggle, you know as a player, nobody's booing you, telling you you're trash, you should die, etc. There's a different level of expectation despite attendance, and I live this. It's not a biased opinion. When you play in New York City, you wake up, think, I better be locked in, or this fan base, these people will let me know daily they booed Derek Jeter when he went 0 for 32. Come on.
What were your thoughts?
As a native San Diegan and baseball fan, I don't like being accused of being the reason why my team essentially has never won a World Series, because
correct,
I have not cared enough as a fan to be hard enough on the players to really bring them and drive them to their best.
You know, I saw a really good tweet that said the Red Sox didn't win a World Series championship for 86 years. 86 years they went without a title because their fan base was too nice. That's not the case, right? 86, the 86 years drought that they had, I'll clue you guys in on something. Had nothing to do with the fan base. It had to do with the caliber of the players. And it had to do with getting hot at the right time in October. That's all it is. Telling someone that they need to die, Cameron, we rail against that. I can't stand when I see a Padres fan attack a player on Instagram or send DMs. I think that is the trashiest, lowest of the low you can go. I'm never going to advocate for that. Never. Never will I advocate. Go into some of these DMs and tell them you should die.
Well, it's funny that it's a player who's advocating for it.
Right. It is very
someone who actually had to live it said, no, I need more death threats to play better. It was, is essentially what Cameron Maben is saying.
It's a real tired.
Now, he's entitled to his opinion.
Sure.
He says, I played for both teams. And if both are sold out, there's not atmosphere like playing in New York City and pinstripes.
He hasn't been here in a while.
If you're trying to even compare the two atmospheres, you're delusional.
He hasn't been here in a while then. I mean, Petco Park, I remarked yesterday on a Sunday afternoon, jamming. I mean, absolutely filled to the brim with people. And so I had no energy to argue with Cameron Maben then. I don't have any energy to argue with him now. You know, keep doing what you're doing. Support players, boo players, whatever you want to do. But there's no need for, you know, death threats and things of that nature. It doesn't make a player play better. Juan Soto's not playing well in New York because they're screaming they want him to die. I know that. That's a fact. He's not going to the ballpark. I better get a hit or they're going to kill me. Now, that would be an interesting way to play baseball. If you don't get knocks, they shoot you. That would be a very interesting way. Like, how did that work out for Joey Gallo in New York? It almost killed him. It almost broke him as a man. You know, so I don't say it's got to be kumbaya all the time. And they'll be fine.
Now, the Yankees do have the most World Series titles.
Yeah.
Although, I'd argue strongly that for many, many, many decades, they also had all the best players.
That's exactly right.
And that's probably why they won the bulk. Now, they haven't won one since 2009.
Right.
And the teams that have won it since are an eclectic mix. And I wouldn't say that the Giants, Cardinals, Red Sox, Royals, Cubs, Astros, Nationals, Dodgers, Dodgers doesn't count. There was no fans in that one.
Right.
Braves and Rangers. Those are the different teams that have won it since then. I don't know that any of those fan bases are particularly brutally hard on their teams yet. They won World Series titles.
Talk about bias. I'm from there. No one gives a frog's fat ass about the Texas Rangers until they make the playoffs, Ben. They really don't. And Kansas City, are those fans notoriously mean and vicious? Washington, the Nationals, those fans vicious and mean? It's a dumb take by Cameron Maben, who had his moment on Twitter, and he got dragged for it. I think rightfully so.
If you've got some thoughts, you can join us, 833-288-0973. Take some phone calls after you check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Now, I do think that psychologically, individually, there are some people who respond better to positive reinforcement, and there are some people who are just a little more motivated when they're worried about the negative criticism they may get if they fail. And that is an individual personality trait. You may be sharpest and at your best knowing that, you know, tightrope walker. If I make a bad step, I fall off the cliff to my death. But other people may respond better knowing, hey, if I get the game-winning hit here, the crowd is going to go crazy and they're going to shower me with love. That's a personal, psychological, just kind of how you're motivated and how you're wired.
Again, there's zero correlation to mean fans and championships.
Correct.
That's what it boils down
correct
to. Because if that were the case, Philadelphia, the Flyers, the Eagles, the Phillies, the Sixers would win every year. The Knicks, the Yankees, the Mets, the Giants, the Jets would win every year. They don't. Rarely. Rarely, if ever, for a lot of those teams. So it's a dumb take. And it's tired. It's very, very tired. And I'm too tired to argue with Cameron Maben.
You got some thoughts? 833-288-0973. We'll come back. Woody says he's got a surprise.
Oh,
we
got a surprise for you. You'll like this.
I don't know that I will, but we'll find out next year on 97.3 The Fan.